You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Words? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie, and this episode is hosted by Ryan. We are pleased to present to you DeAndre and Quincy Lenar Gosfield of The Chi, dubbed the godfathers of LGBTQ+ TV. Real-life married couple DeAndre and Quincy Lenar Gosfield are the creators, writers, and directors of the iconic GLAAD award-winning anthology series, The DL Chronicles. Building on their brand and following their passion of telling Black LGBTQ+ stories, they've created and directed the Amazon Prime spinoff series, The Chadwick Journals. The third season, featuring Jamar Michael of Dear White People, won a 2021 Silver Telly Award and garnered a 2020 Daytime Emmy nomination for lead actor Damian Tufik Raven, who played Chadwick. The Gosfields also were tapped to be a part of the producing teams for the hit shows like Cocktails with Chloe and Sunday Best on BET. The pair made their TV directorial debut in 2022 on Lena Waithe's and Showtime's network drama, The Chi. And after that one groundbreaking episode, they were asked to come back as producing directors and directed three episodes for the upcoming 16-episode season 6. We're pleased to present these two incredible creatives on our show, and especially to celebrate them during Pride Month. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast featuring DeAndre and Quincy Lenar Gosfield.
Welcome to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan, and y'all know we can't stop, won't stop when it comes to The Chi. It's the season 6, you guys. 13 episodes are out by the time you hear this episode, and I am freaking out, y'all. Did y'all just see what happened to Leon in this 13th episode? I'm stressed. I'm not going to try to say too much just in case y'all haven't caught up, but I don't know what you're doing with yourself. Go catch up. Watch season 6. Start finishing out the second half of the season, y'all. We only got 16 episodes. And y'all know what happened on them cliffhangers when we get to the end of the season. So I'm very nervous. But we switching it up today because usually it's about the cast. You know, I'm trying to dig and find out about the characters. But today we have producing directors, DeAndre and Quincy Gosfield, joining us. How you doing, guys?
How you doing, Ryan?
I'm so excited, you guys. Thank you for coming. I know you guys came fresh off the set. You guys, this might be like The Chi after dark. I don't know, but I like the way we're kind of recording it.
I like the sound of that. Let's do it.
I know. All right, so listen, I ain't going to get nobody in trouble. I already mentioned that. I don't want the smoke, you know, revealing the wrong kind of things. But
we're
trying to
give you a little embers. We're going to give you some embers.
Okay, cool. Give me a little embers. I appreciate it. But before we start, because, you know, I got like a ton of questions. Like, my sheet is too full. Y'all got to see it. But I want to figure out, like, you know, I'm a little nerd, as y'all can see behind me going on right here. So I'm going to ask the question like this. What's you guys' Chi origin story? Like, how did you get involved in the whole world? Like, how did you get started?
Oh, well, man. I would say my Chi origin story is I was born and raised here. So that's
Okay.
But I mean, that's a little bit of the Chi origin story. But DeAndre,
it's a long story. I'm gonna try to make it short. So basically, Quincy and I got into a fellowship, director's fellowship, Lena Waithe's Rising Voices that she did with Indeed, where it kind of fosters directors in their careers, and when they've hit a glass ceiling and can't get to that next level, they fund a project for them that they can then use as a calling card. So Quincy and I applied, got into this program, did a short film called Flames that went on to premiere at Tribeca. Lena and the folks at Hillman Grad liked it so much, they offered us an episode of The Chi to direct in season 5. That episode was so good and for the show and for them. They felt like Quincy and I had the propensity to produce the whole series to our surprise. And of course, obviously we accepted the challenge, and here we are in producing, directing season 6.
Season 7.
I mean, but season 6 is out right now.
We're excited. By the way, excited about season 7, y'all. That's what I'm saying. Excited. Like the diversity behind in front of the camera. You're just glad it keeps going because you get nervous. You know, when you get around that 6 season, you're like, don't do this to me. Let it keep going, and people just get to appreciate the culture, our culture told the right way.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yeah, that's what keeps the show going is the people who are supporting the show, the fans who are out there talking about it, nervous about it, shouting about it, keeping attention and eyes. This show can't exist without you guys. It just can't. It can't continue without you. So, you guys play a huge part in why we get to keep making this show. It's because you keep loving on us, and we so appreciate it.
Is there any part of The Chi that you guys haven't shot yet that you guys wanted that you can tease? I don't know. Like, if you're going to go there and we haven't seen it yet, maybe not. Because you guys do. I feel like you guys use the locations in The Chi really cool. Just the vibe of the city.
We can tease that, season 7 is Summer Chi. And if you guys have been watching for the last few seasons, we've kind of been trapped in the cycle of winters, falls and winters. And if anybody who's been to Chicago in the summer knows that this is a happening city. And we really do want to explore summer Chicago. Like, we want our cast to be outside. And we really do want to showcase so much more of Chicago that we don't get to showcase during the winter. So I can't give you specific details, but I'm going to tell you, we're going to be outside.
Hey, as long as it's getting warmer, because it's looking cold, people nervous, as long as it's getting warmer.
It's heating up for sure. I think, we run in parallel with hot summer. The show is getting hot too.
Oh man, oh my gosh. Everybody be out in the summer. It's gonna get crazy. I can already imagine for season 7. Just give us a little hint of what you guys do on a day-to-day basis, just for people that want to know a little bit behind the scenes, producing director, being a producing director, what all does that entail on a day-to-day basis, just for people that are curious?
Oh, a lot. So basically we work for Lena Waithe and her showrunners, Justin Hillian and Jewel Cornell. We're basically their avatars. So the three of them are basically steer the show creatively. Quincy and I are the avatars here on the ground in Chicago. They work from LA. And it entails a lot of stuff from creative choices, based off of we go through the scripts and we decide, okay, some story is not tracking, or we can't shoot this in this location the way you guys wrote it. And we have a negotiation with them to kind of figure out how best to execute what their vision is on the page. And then after that, we're sort of governing our team from our actors to our crew, basically setting up a situation for them to best execute the stuff that we need to shoot. So that can be helping, maintain our budgets, making choices that are budget friendly, making sure that our actors are aware of their story arcs so that they don't make choices that kind of go against where we're going with the season. We govern our directors that come in and direct the episodes to make sure that they don't direct something that's off the mark of what we're trying to achieve. And then wherever else we're needed, we're just hands on whatever space we can fill where there's a void, we show up, and we're like doctors on call, just any and everything all the time.
keepers of the vision.
That's
if I can
it.
Put it,
To
you know,
sum it
put
up.
It in a nerdy way. I'm gonna use
hey,
my
I
nerd
like
phrase.
It. I like we nerding are, it out and hearing, you know, like, people don't know. Yeah.
The keepers of the flame, you know. But also, you know, I think our biggest, not our biggest, but a very important part of our contribution to the show overall is in the beginning prep time of the season. Like before the season begins, we actually get to assist in creating the look, the tone of the show. And if you've noticed, 6A and 6B have taken we would say even a more cinematic approach to the content. So me and DeAndre work really hard together to come up with a lookbook, and we work with our DP on, hey, this is the direction that visually and tonally we really think the show would really shine in. And then we do have to pitch that to the network. We get approval from our showrunners, we get approval from Lena. They look at our lookbooks and they go, this is great, we like this. If there's something that they don't like, you know, we adjust. But then in the end, once it's approved, then it's our job to basically keep that vision and make sure that we're managing. It's like, it's a big managerial position. So we're managing all of the heads of the departments, all of the directors that are coming in, and making sure that the vision that is set at the beginning of every season is achieved and it's kept. And so we have to, you know, give a lot of advice on how we achieve that, you know, especially when coming into situations where there's conflict. There's always conflict in production. You know, what you put on, like DeAndre said, what you put on the paper, it's easy to put on paper, but sometimes it's not as easy to execute. And you find, oh my gosh, like for instance, we directed an episode what episode was this? It was the Halloween episode, and it was a trick-or-treating episode. And of course it was supposed to be fall, and it was all decorated. We had the streets all blocked off, and you know, our art department had decorated the hell out of this block. It had tombstones and monsters coming up out of the ground. I mean, it was amazing. Like if I was a kid, it would be a place I wanted to trick or treat. Why did we have a major snowstorm on the day that we shot it? So it's things like that. Like, okay, now how do you pivot? How do you adjust? You know, there was an incident while we were shooting that where, because of the snowstorm, it was freezing our cameras, and some of our cameras were shutting down, which we were now losing time. And then we also had children. We had baby Ronnie. We had little EJ. So we had kids that we have to shoot only within a certain amount of hours. We lose them. We call them they pumpkin out. So legally, we have to, you know, release the kids. And because of this storm, we lost our kids. But the whole
in a
reason
scene that
we're
they were
shooting,
supposed to be in.
Yeah. The whole reason that we're shooting this is because they're trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
Their parents are taking them trick-or-treating. Now we don't have the kids. So we had to, like, we're there to think, it happened to be our episode, but if it wasn't our episode, we'd be there to think,
to help find a solution. Yeah.
What's the solution? So the solution that we had was, hey, let's put Keisha in front of this one house, and let's put a group of background kids who were legally still able to be there on the porch and make a crowd as if baby Ronnie and little EJ is in that crowd somewhere. So
if you guys,
if you watch the episode, you'll see it. There is no little EJ there. And then we had her improvise a line like, okay, baby, say thank you. So you hear her say that, but the audience is led to believe she
you'll
just
see,
took
and
him
you'll
to the
see
porch.
It. You'll see it. This is a little spill. We won't tell you what happens in the scene, but this is this is next week's episode, 614, by the way.
Yeah. Yes, 614. So, you know, things like that, you know, we have to be there to make sure that, you know, it gets done. The job gets done, and it gets done well. So it's challenging sometimes, but it's like a fun challenge.
Yeah, because you don't know, like you can't predict it every single day what you're going to run into.
You can't predict it.
And just the continuity that you guys come up with to keep going for season six, like these characters are just so dynamic. And it just seems like there's never just like a cap to what they can do and where the arc is going to go but you guys still make it relatable. Like you can still go back to like season one and figure out little parts of their personality that you're seeing kind of flourish more, or something that you kind of dive into more that you thought, well, that character really doesn't have it in them. You know, and I'm curious, like when you talk about the shots, and let me do my little director hack thing. Watch me get it all the way wrong, but I'm just gonna mention it. Victor, you know, this season has been going through it, as we all know. The over-the-shoulder shots, I think is what you would call them, are coming from behind him on like the couch, you know, when he's in court. It's just so powerful to see like that slow movement around him. And just like he always seems to be in this, like, you know, like this pensive, like it just seems like the whole weight of the world is on his shoulders every time that shot hits. And it just seems so different than the first half of the
It
season.
is. Shout out to our DP, Christian Tico Herrera, who comes up with these dynamic shots with us. I think, yeah, everything that that camera does is very deliberate. Like I'm so happy that you're feeling it, because that is the point. We painstakingly try to put that camera in places that evokes emotion. So you are noticing these over the shot and pensive shots of Victor, because he is in a state of flux this season. He's toggling between and toting between Victor and Trig, and trying to figure out which who he is. Trig keeps trying to pull him back. Victor is his new per this new person that's, a pillar of society, a politician, and then the streets keep trying to call him back. And so every shot you see tries to convey that. I think audience members may notice this season we do a lot of what you call frame within a frame shots. And that's where, you'll see like Victor, he'll be, say, in a doorway, but then we pull even further back and he himself is in a doorway, and then you pull further back and he's under an archway. And then he's also inside of the frame of our camera frame. That's to show that he's boxed in. The walls are closing in on him. You see a lot of shots of him where, and those scenes where Trig is calling at him, or there's some conflict with another character, you feel the claustrophobic feeling. Most of the stuff will go over the audience's head, but the point is that you feel something. And you may not know, you may not understand that's what we were doing, but you understand when you're looking at that image, you go, dang, Vic, what's
It
going on
evokes
with you?
it.
Oh, I feel
So I'm
it.
glad
Because
that you're
he
noticing
feels
that.
different. He just feels so different. Like every time you see him on camera, like you want to give him a hug. Cause it just feels so bad. Like it's just like every time you see him, you just like he was this superhero figure, right? And it's just like everything. It's like he doesn't know which way to move. And like you said, it does feel like he's in a box. It's like, well, which way do I go? I go left or right.
I mean, it's even details down to color theory, which is something that's planned out with us at the beginning of the season, you know, as a part of our lookbook. When we're thinking about the character's arc for the season, the trajectory, what they're going through, okay, what we call our LUT, you know, that LUT, that's a color correction term. What's the LUT for this person? So each character actually has their own color palette that we use when we're color correcting and when we're lighting them, you know. So you might notice Alicia's tends to be a lot of gold. Due to this season, I think we lean more
Oh, real
towards.
quick, it's a gold, but sometimes red when she's about to do something very shady. She'll be wearing, you'll notice she'll start to wear red. So that's on purpose. Go ahead. I had to add
And
that little part.
that's with ward that's also with wardrobe and with clothing. All of that is
Ooh, I
to
love
work
that. I love how that
together
plays together.
with the heads of our department, you know, like, okay, even down to hair choices. Like, okay, in this moment, should her hair be, how should she appear? Should she appear pulled together, powerful, hair back, hair up in a powerful bun? Or is she a little disheveled and is her hair a little loose and is it down? And she let it down because she's about to fight, you know, like all of those considerations are taken into account every episode. And then of the overall arc of the style and the look of the show is decided, like I said, in the beginning of the season. And so it's actually fun. And most people, like he said, aren't paying attention to those details, and they shouldn't be. They really shouldn't be, because it's like if you're paying attention to that, then you're not engrossed in the moment. You're
The
not, you
story.
know, into the story. So those things are done to make you feel a certain kind of way, so that you're engrossed in the story and you're not actually stopping to go, wait a minute, her hair up right now, that means this. This, you know, but you see it, you feel it, you don't know why, but it keeps you glued to the screen, and that's the fun stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's like the fun stuff we get to do.
Yeah, I'm noticing because I literally, like, I get so ingrained in it, so into the characters, I watch it, then I want to go back because I'm like, well, maybe I missed something that, you know, especially when it comes to Alicia and Duda. Like, you can't, like, Duda got, like, 50,000 lives. Like, when it comes to them, you're like, well, okay, well, I missed this guy that he had over here that was in his crew that might even sitting shady over here in the corner. So maybe he's got this plan, and then he's going to go after this dude that I thought was safe. You know, you never know, like, what their plan is gonna, you know, how unravel. And speaking of which, those characters, I'm so curious if you guys knew, by the way, shout out to Lynn Whitfield, Curtis Cook, those guys are amazing as like villains, like on two opposite sides dealing with how this is going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you guys know that you wanted to find, you know, a character like Alicia to kind of face off for Duda? Because I would always think that eventually Duda and Victor would be the ones, and you know, we never know, like it's the shy, you can't predict it, but I always would think that Victor would be the one to come head to head with Duda and be the one that could stop him. But Victor is taking on a whole other persona, and we got Alicia in the picture. So I'm wondering, like, how do you guys, you know, and I know we got to tiptoe around, but how do you guys figure out like who you wanted to be on the opposite end of Duda, like who you wanted to face him?
Well, that's the writer's room. Yeah, that's Lena Waithe and our brilliant writers. They come up with these story arcs. And I think, you know, the series has been so male driven for so long. It was nice to add a little like villainous in there somewhere. You know, it's I think the best thing about it is it's unexpected because you always want to keep the audience on their toes. I think Victor being the nemesis is so expected for Duda. Of course, they have this rivalry and they want each other's blood and Duda and drug him and all this mess. Of course, that's the most obvious villain. But I think what Alicia's character does for the show is it shakes things up. Also, it gives us some feminine energy on the gangster side, and I think
it does. Yeah.
It's a much more interesting dynamic than, you know, the expected Victor Duda beef. And the other thing is the way that Alicia plays her gangster is so much more classy. I know Duda's a little classy too, but Alicia does not get her hands dirty, which is fun to watch. Well, she just manipulates everything from this throne. And it's just a fun character to watch play out on screen. Yeah. So that's a shout out to our writers and Lena Waithe. They come up with all that stuff.
Yes. Well, the great part was the funny story was, so, you know, Lena and the writers had this idea of creating this character, Alicia, and they wanted, you know, Lena wanted to have someone with some, you know, cachet who was, you know, old school cachet, right? You like someone from the community that we all knew and love or know and love and like to give them this. So we had to come up with like this list of people that we thought, okay, women that we thought, okay, this will be really dope if Felicia Rashad would pop up, if this person would pop up, you know. So we had this list, and the funny thing is, like, me and DeAndre had on our list Lynn Whitfield. We like, oh my gosh, Lynn Whitfield would be amazing, you know, in this role. And it was like, we sent our list of women, and we had Lynn at the top. Mm-hmm. We sent it to our showrunners, and literally we were on our way to LA that week at O'Hare Airport, and who did we run into? Literally, Lynn Whitfield.
Oh, wow.
Yes, at the ticket counter with us. We all were trying rearrange some flight errors that we had, and literally ran into her and her daughter. And I was like, that is so weird. We just sent that email like last night, and here we are standing face to face with Lynn Whitfield. We had no idea that, you know, she was actually going to end up being Alicia. It was just a wish list. But it's so just so funny how and serendipitous the whole thing turned out to be. And she's here and she's killing it.
Same thing with Iman. I know it's a little bit of a splinter, But like, what's fun about what Quincy and I get to do as producing directors is we do get to suggest actors for the roles. And most times, Lena's on board with what we and our showrunners, they're on board with what we pick. So the same thing came up for Iman's dad, for forget, I'm calling him
Leon.
Iman. Lee, no, his Iman's character's name, Rob. When we had to, the same thing happened then. It was like the prototype. You know, the writers come up with a prototype, what he has to be. He has to be tall enough to look like he could have birthed a basketball player like Iman, who is, you know, in real life. And he has to be suave and old enough to, you know, that part. And then he has to be somebody who Alicia would have been attracted to, because you can tell she's got high standards. It has to be somebody debonair, suave, you know, just that dude. And when we were doing that list, we came up with Leon. I didn't think in a million years that he'd say yes to the shy. You know, he's Leon, he's busy. And it didn't take, they as soon as the offer went out, he was like, yeah. So I was so excited for him to say yeah. And as you guys can see, he's killing it on the show.
It's just fantastic. And to see that character mix out with Rob's character and what Rob is going through. It's so interesting just to see, like I said, the way these characters, the way the men are making these tough choices. Like I like episode 13 is called Legacy, and I love how these men are getting put in these positions. It's like, okay, this is my family. Some choices I can run from, some I can't. Am I going to make it to the other side? I have people depending on me. So I just love how, like you said, it's very male centric, but it's at the same time, this season is really putting a lot in the men's hands. Like, you have Emmett, you got Rob, you got all of these guys, you got Victor trying to figure out Papa, like his world. I'm like, dude, what's going on? When you're a fan from before and just watching him grow through his struggle with the church, and we all know how it goes down in the black church. So the things that he's
Oh
probably about
gosh.
to go through.
Yes.
So yeah, it's just so amazing. It's so amazing to see how you guys have been working this out.
Thank
Yeah, it's
you.
fun. It's fun.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So I gotta ask before, because I gotta wrap it up, because I ain't trying to get nobody in trouble, and I will, because I'm such a big fan and I have so many questions and I've been loving it and going back and watching throughout the
Look, you
episodes.
ask away, you ask away.
But I do want to keep plugging that y'all need to go check out the season. I'm telling you right now, we've been waiting for a second two part two to come back. You guys go fix it or go watch it. Go all the way to episode 13 and get caught up what's going down. I'm trying to think if there's anybody, because that's really like the biggest dynamic right now is everybody's trying to figure out what's going to go way down with Duda, because this guy is like, he got people everywhere. He's working to every business. It's no way to face him out. But I'm trying to. Oh, I know one character. I guess coming up into episode 13, we kind of tease and see where you guys go with this one, because I love the diversity and way this is branching out. When you talk about like Emmett and the restaurant, and he's got so many kind of cool characters now behind the scenes helping, the cook. Like you got Lala, and she has a cousin that came in that was kind of flirty, and I was like, all right, Serena coming in here who was kind of flirty. And I thought it, and she was also deaf. So I thought it was cool how you guys brought like two different elements, like I said, always keeping the diversity, always keeping us thinking, having the question where, I don't know if that was a character pick on you guys' decision. Was it Lena? Like, how did you guys come up with like adding that kind of cool mixture
That
in?
was
That was
Lena
all
on the
Lena.
writers. Lena's always, she's always on the cutting edge of representation. So any niche area of any community that's not represented on screen, that's going to be her forte. That's going to be where she goes. It's like, I haven't seen this. I don't know why we haven't seen this. I'm going to be the one to put this out there. And we love this character, Serena. I think it's a great addition to the show. And she's such a wonderful actress in general, just a really good person. You know, of course, it requires some different elements to our production, because we have to be able to communicate with her, and it's a very different directing style with her. And crew has to be aware of, like, don't talk outside of her vision, you know, all of those things. But I love it because it's those things that we take for granted as hearing people, how we behave and walk through the world. We've learned, she's taught us so much about how to, like, be aware of the deaf community. And I think the viewers are going to be taught something too by just watching how she moves through our show and with our characters. It's so educational. She's so good, just a good actress in general. It's just been great. I love when Lena does this kind of stuff. She's just always on the forefront, always. Yeah.
Keeping her thumb on the pulse of,
absolutely,
you know, what's socially relevant, you know, topics that, you know, Lena's out there, y'all. Lena's out watching the socials. Lena stays aware. She likes to really like dive deep in what's going on in the world, what's going on in the community. And, you know, she knows that she has this huge platform, and her whole goal is like, what's the purpose of having this platform if I can't use it to be, you know, something to start a conversation or to, yeah, explore a topic. So she's always looking for ways to bring, you know, explore things that people don't want to talk about. Or like DeAndre said, to shed light on parts of our community that often get overlooked. And I love that. And that's what also keeps the show fresh.
Yeah.
Keeps it fresh and relevant. Yeah.
Yeah, none of these characters you could be put in a box just like Black people. So I love that they keep going. You know what I mean? Like, I love that it's, yeah, always going to be a layer. I love that Lena keeps her pulse on it. So we always see something different that people don't, you know, think about and think that you could put certain cultures in a box and you can't. So I love,
right,
how that,
exactly,
that continues to break it out.
People,
I guess,
you know,
go ahead.
You go. No, I was just going to say, you know, in people, real life, we wear multiple faces. You know what,
yep,
I mean? Like, you're a different person at work than you probably are at home, than you are in the church, than you are here and,
yep,
there. And people change and they grow and they make different decisions. And so, you know, you can't box an individual. And that's what I love about this show. You can't box in the characters, because this person might be this way for a season, and then all of a sudden
they
it's
flip.
A flip, and you're like, what the hell? Why did
which
flip?
Happens
you
in
know?
Which happens in real life. None of us
in
are monoliths. We're all very,
yeah,
complicated people, human beings. And the other thing I like about too, when she does introduce these niche characters, they're never, the lens is never put on their niche, you know, whether if they're gay or,
mm-hmm,
lesbian or deaf.
Mm-hmm.
She never makes the story about that. They're just,
yeah,
people. It's we're past all that stuff. It's more about character and how, your relationships with other people. And I love that, because when you do that for an audience, they suddenly lift off their blinders and their,
yep,
lenses and start to see people as people. And so she does that so well. And I love it.
Yeah, it's just like, just visually, when you can see something, I just feel like that image just stays with people and they start asking questions. The conversation opens up. What, I guess, speaking of conversation, what would you guys tease, like, going throughout for the rest of the season? Because I feel like we started with love, a lot of love, you know, and it's getting dark. It's getting a little bit dark because they're having to figure things out. They're having to figure,
mm-hmm,
out who they rely on, you know, who's really dark, who's playing the game, who needs help. So how would you guys explain, like, the love-dark relationship, mm-hmm, or kind of tease that going into the rest of these final
dark
episodes?
Well, I think the love is still there. I think,
mm,
why you're seeing all of this conflict is because people's love for each other and their love to try to overcome all the darkness. I think people,
yeah,
are getting darkness because there's this love and zeal for life and community and family, and they're finding themselves having to do what they have to do to get through this incredible trying time. And so it takes them to dark places, because ultimately it's just a survival thing.
Yeah.
This is what a lot of folks deal with this is real. This is what a lot of us deal with in urban areas and in the hood, where, you know,
circumstances and decisions.
Yeah, you're making these decisions as a means for survival. And what is survival about? Your love and zeal for life, or family, or the need to protect family. So when you're pushed, into a corner, you will find yourself doing some very strange things to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody is inherently dark. I don't even think Duda is inherently dark. I think he's a victim or a product of his circumstance. He's become the guy that he is because he had to be. And now he's a relentless, relentless gangster. But Duda didn't always start off that way. He was an,
yeah,
altruistic character trying to protect his community and fell into the clutches of the streets. And so now he's puppeting all these people around him, and they're finding themselves getting dark because they want to be outside of his clutches. And it's just a survival thing. It's not even, none of these people are dark. They have to do what they got to do to maintain. So it's very complicated.
I would also add that to me, this is a season of this repercussions and decisions. You know, we've seen characters like Duda who have accepted partnership with Duda. I mean, I said it wrong. I'm sorry. We've seen characters like Emmett who mm-hmm. accepted a partnership with Duda, you know, for money because he's taking care of a family. He yeah. wants to provide more for his Keisha and his children. And, you know, he's found himself, you know, making a deal with the devil. And, you know, so you have all of these characters who have made different decisions, like DeAndre said, for multiple reasons, for family, for survival, for safety, for wealth, or to feel loved or accepted. And this season, you know, with every decision, there's a consequence. And I think, you know, this is the chicken coming home to roost for a lot of the characters based off of the decisions that they've all made based off of, you know, the circumstances that they found themselves in. So, you know, it's complicated, but as in life, you know, we make decisions and there's something on the other side of those decisions that we have to meet at some point, whether it be positive or negative. And that's what our characters will be experiencing for 6B.
Yeah, I love that they can't run from it. You kind of want, sometimes you want that like fairy tale ending in the TV and the movies, but I love how it's so real life that you like, oh my gosh, she did not just do that. You know, like it's just you're like you thinking they're like cookies and rainbows and flowers, and then something random happens. And you like, well,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
a shot. What lesson we learn in today?
Yeah.
Such
yeah.
is I life. Mean, I think Papa, we all do
yeah.
that.
And Pastor Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah, we all. I think we all do that. I think, you know, I'll talk about me. Like, I can be good for a few years, like doing the right thing, and suddenly a little temptation of a decision that I wouldn't normally make is telling me that there might be something on the other side of it that's not necessarily the path I would go down to usually get it, but this is a quick way. I might do that. It may work. It may not work. But I think none of us are incapable of making really crazy decisions when pushed up against the wall. I think that's what a lot of our characters are showing people. That's why they change face. It's just human. That's what we do. And I think I love taking our audience through that experience and that psychological trauma or psychological decision making or whatever to make some kind of decision that you kind of watch them, and you know, you get to vicariously see it and not be responsible for the other end of that and go, oh, why did they do that? Mm-hmm. And maybe make you self-reflect on the decisions you mm-hmm. make. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really good. It's a good dynamic.
None of us will ever escape our consequences. You know what I mean? So yeah. Hopefully those of us who get to survive our consequences, and if they turn out to be, you know, not the most positive, we learn and we grow, and that's part of the process of being human, right? You know, we shoot our shots. It might, like you said, we might hit the target, we might be off the target. But if we live through it, we learn, we grow, and hopefully we make better decisions.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Listen, I'm just saying, y'all need a master class after this is done. But I want to wrap up with this. First of all, I'm about to throw my prediction out there. They can't see y'all faces, so if y'all give me like, but I'm getting ready to throw my prediction out. I'm gonna go with Alicia, only because this is what I'm finding out. If we doing Duda versus Alicia, because I've been looking at the posters. Everybody been making faces, you know, in these posters. Well, we got to figure out what's hidden behind this face that they making. So I'm just putting my prediction out there for the listeners. So y'all let me know. Y'all can beat me up in the comments if I'm wrong by the time we get to the episode 16. But I'm going with Alicia just because the emotions is all over the spectrum. And I can't read her. I can't read her. And Duda is like, he's been drinking a lot for me lately. So I've been kind of watching him. So I'm like, we're gonna see. So I'm gonna go with Alicia just by my last little prediction I want to throw out there. But I want to kind of end with you guys where I want to ask, what would you say for is your, I guess, been the most inspiring thing that's happened to you as directors? I kind of want to end on that just to kind of give, like future directors something to think about, something to focus on. What's been the most inspiring thing, part of your journey so far?
I think the most inspiring thing for me is just working with my great cast. I think you as a director, you come in, you work really quickly with a host of actors, and you kind of you do your thing and you check out. I think this show has been so rewarding because we're such a family unit here. We lean on each other, we love on each other. I think I'm so inspired by all of these talented people that we get to work with on a every day. I don't think this show has filled me up in a way that in my entire career, and no shade to any of the other actors I work with. I've loved every actor I've worked with, but this particular situation has truly inspired me to be more open. These are just great people. I've never been so open as a creative or a director that I've the way I've been on this show. And it's just because of the immense love that we have for each other on the set. It's something that I've never experienced. I'm afraid that when I leave here, I won't experience it again. So it's just made me a better director. It's made me a better person. It's made me learn my craft a lot better. When you have actors that you love and love you back and really work when you work as a unit together to make something great. This is that's
Right.
been the most ex inspiring thing I've experienced so far in my career. This show in particular, The Chi, is amazing.
I would, I mean, all everything that he says, I completely second that. I would also say what's been one of the most amazing moments, plural, that I keep having with this show. Number one, this show, I left Chicago in 1996 to pursue a dream of being a actor, creator, filmmaker, and this show brought me back home 26 years later, to produce and direct a show about my hometown. So that's been like this beautiful 360 moment for me, and it's made me fall back in love with my city, with the city that I grew up in. The other thing that's always amazing to me, and I'm always so grateful, and look, I'm never jaded. I'm one of those people, like, my eyes are always, I look at everything with like awe and wonder all the time. And to work, like DeAndre said, to work with these actors, but specifically to work with Lynn Whitfield, to work with Kadeem Hardison, to work with Leon, to work with Jason Weaver. These are people that I grew up watching on television. And I never in my wildest dreams knew that I would necessarily be their friend. You know what I mean? Working with them and having a work relationship, but we all have great friendships and relationships outside of the show now. And so it sometimes it just blows my mind because we're just seeing each other as just people. We just working. Hey, my brother, I love you, love you, love. Now we're hanging out. We're going to have dinner, and we're doing this and we're doing that. Yolanda Ross. I've been in love with Yolanda forever. From back in the day with her earlier projects. And sometimes I have to stop and look across the table or look next to me in the seat and remember, boy, do you realize who this is? This is, and it hits me, and then I become starstruck for a moment all over again. But what I love so much about them is that they're such genuine, real, down to earth people, and the whole celebrity thing, really has no effect on who they are as people. And that's why we're able to, bond so deeply. But yeah, it's beautiful because then I think I picture myself as this kid, watching the Josephine Baker story, this kid in middle school thinking I was Dwayne Wayne, wearing my
With the
flip-up
flip
glasses.
sunglasses, yep.
I had the glasses. I had the glasses. So and to be directing these people and being partners in a creative, space with these actors who I've watched my whole life is something. It's pretty pretty amazing to me when that happens. And I just have to go, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. You know, I stuck through this for so long, and you just never know, you know, where you land.
Yeah.
The other thing too, we got to add in this is it's always hard when you just name it a few of our actors because we love everybody.
Oh no, please name them all, because this cast is phenomenal. If you guys are not watching, like, everybody is phenomenal.
I can't name them. I mean, we also love Luke James, who every day. He sings on the set for us, and I'm like, I keep forgetting this is I freaking work with Luke James. But I think another great thing is our niece is who plays Kenya on the show. We've got to see her grow as an actor. This was something that you know, she is something that she's been wanting to do, and there was an opportunity on the show. She did. This was not nepotism. She auditioned. She got a couple little coaching from me and Quincy, and this is his brother's daughter. And
it's my niece, my real niece.
We've watched her grow up, and she plays Kenya, and she's flourishing. I think that's inspiring too, because to be able to see her dreams come true on something that we're working on has been so fulfilling to us. So yeah, that is Quincy's blood niece. That is his brother's daughter.
She's amazing. Niece.
Yeah, wow,
very first
wow,
niece.
That's
I probably
this is why you can feel the family on the show.
Yeah,
I probably cried more than she did when I heard that.
But I have to stress. She did not get it because of us. We didn't even tell anybody who she was. We just coached her on her audition. She blew us away. She sent in her tape and she booked it by Lena, handpicked by Lena Wade. And it was
We believe it. If you have not watched episode of this show, you don't know. Like, I believe it. You got to come with your A game when you're on the show, because you don't know what's getting thrown at you. Like, that's the fun of us as actors or, you know, as fans watching this show. Like, you don't know what's going to get thrown at you. So you can tell these actors, the crew, y'all don't play. You can tell you bring A game.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So,
well, I'm excited. I appreciate you guys. I could keep talking for hours because, like I said, I love the show. I love what it represents for the culture. I hope we got 8, 9, 10. You know, I know y'all got other busy, you know, I'm sure it's going to be other projects down the line coming your way, but hopefully we keep the seasons going of The Chi, because I'm excited to see what happens with these characters.
You guys,
we got a season guaranteed.
Keep
season
loving
7.
On us.
Season 7 is coming, so you at least know that. So
I'm excited. I was so excited to get that news for Andy, because I know you guys about to turn up on this last episode. So I needed that season 7.
Hot summer, the hot summer.
DeAndre Quincy, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you so much.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.